This is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, in for Terry Gross. First, there was Apocalypse Now, the Francis Ford Coppola Vietnam film that took years to make and was infamous for its problems with money, logistics, stars, and the lack of a workable shooting script. Coppola began filming in 1976, inspired by Joseph Conrad's novel Heart of Darkness, and unveiled it 3 years later, years in which he replaced original lead Harvey Keitel with Martin Sheen, had to shoot around an overweight and uncooperative Marlon Brando, and deal with heart attacks, drug use, and the risk of the loss of his own money to complete the film. When all the napalm smoke cleared, Apocalypse Now was declared a masterpiece. Next came Hearts of Darkness, A Filmmaker's Apocalypse, a behind-the-scenes look at the frenzied making of Apocalypse Now. It didn't come out until 1991 as a documentary on Showtime, and it vanished a year later, until now. That documentary, written by Fax Barr and George Hickenlooper, finally has been released on DVD. The 1991 production featured new interviews with the cast and crew, reflecting on the insanity of the making of the film. Terry also interviewed some of the film's participants, including Walter Murch, who won an Academy Award for sound design.
The film is just under 2.5 hours long, and there were just under 250 hours of material.
Wow.
So it's roughly 100 hours of material for every hour that made it on the screen. So it's actually amazing that we finished it as quickly as we did.
Terry also spoke with star Martin Sheen, who talks about the movie's intense opening scene, and later about suffering a heart attack during filming. At the time, he was 36 years old.
I had been drinking all of that day, and I was quite inebriated by the time we got to filming that scene. And I asked Francis to allow me to wrestle, in a sense, with some demons that were inside of me that I was wrestling with, to get them out in the open, to wrestle with them in public, to wrestle with them on film. And he was very reluctant, and particularly when I hurt myself in the middle of the scene, he tried to stop it. I had slammed my hand into a mirror, which I didn't even know was there. And he had two cameras going, and I begged him not to stop. A lot of my pain came to the surface. There was no defense left. And you saw, really, in a sense, who I was at that time. I was a very confused man, very unhappy man. And I came to grips with it there.
In Hearts of Darkness, the most amazing footage is material that was shot at the time, and shot, even more amazingly, by Coppola's wife, Eleanor. She gets more up close and personal than any other behind-the-scenes filmmaker could have, especially when interviewing her husband.
What I have to admit is that I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, how do you account for the discrepancy between what you feel about it and what everybody else who sees it or the other?
Because they see the magic of what has happened before. I'm saying, hey, it's not gonna happen. I don't have any performances. The script doesn't make sense. I have no ending. I'm like a voice crying out, saying, please, it's not working. Somebody get me off this. And nobody listens to me. Everyone says, yes, well, Francis works best in a crisis. I'm saying, this is one crisis I'm not gonna pull myself out of. I'm making a bad movie, so why should I go ahead? I'm gonna be bankrupt anyway. Why can't I just have the courage to say it's no good?
Francis Coppola's Apocalypse Now was very good, and so is Hearts of Darkness, using footage filmed by Eleanor Coppola. Terry spoke with Eleanor Coppola in 1992 when the documentary was released theatrically after its premiere on cable. During the filming of Apocalypse Now, Francis Coppola staged spectacular recreations of the American bombing of Vietnam. Terry asked Eleanor Coppola what it felt like to be in the middle of a phony war.
Well, I found it really exhilarating. You know, it's like the most incredible 4th of July kind of a light show with these, you know, enormous explosions, and the earth shook like an earthquake. They were huge, particularly the napalm attack and the scene with Colonel Kilgore, Robert Duvall, was just a powerful event to be there. It was just, your whole body felt the concussion and this enormous, you know, whatever it was, 10,000 gallons of fuel was lit and exploded in the jungle. And I really found it extraordinary. And I think sometimes that even annoyed Francis, that he was trying to get his work done and everybody else was kind of at a light show.
One of the stories that the movie gets into, the documentary on the making of Apocalypse Now, is how Francis Coppola used helicopters from the Philippine Army because the United States Army wouldn't cooperate with the making of a movie about Vietnam. But the government kept wanting the helicopters back to fight a civil war against communist insurgents. Tell us some of the ways that kept disrupting the shooting of Apocalypse Now.
It was a very disruptive situation because the Army would send out their helicopters and whatever pilots they wanted to send out, and the pilots would be different every day, so they hadn't rehearsed. They didn't realize what it was like to fly in through filming situations, and they would sometimes they'd fly too high and they wouldn't be in the camera shot, or they just wouldn't realize what was involved in really performing for the camera, so to speak. So they would lose many shots because the pilots wouldn't be flying in the right place to be seen in the camera. And then the next day, by the time they finally learned how to do it, the next day they'd send different pilots. And then very frequently they would call the planes away. They'd be all set up for a shot. Everyone would be out there on the location shooting, and they would get some radio communication that that four of the helicopters had to leave for military reasons, or some days all of the helicopters, or some days they would be out there ready to work and expecting eight helicopters to be provided, and only two would show up. So it was a very difficult part of the production, and it cost tens and tens of thousands of dollars in lost footage and waiting for the helicopters to come that never came.
And there were guards at your house because Marcos was afraid that rebels would kidnap you and Francis Coppola for publicity?
Yes, they had some idea that if Francis would be kidnapped for some political reasons by the insurgents, that it would create an international incident and bring attention to the Philippines and unwanted attention, so that they provided us right from the beginning with guards, personal bodyguards. And it was very strange to live in a context where these bodyguards were around all the time. And I actually felt more concerned finally that the guards might cause some accident. They got very casual about their weapons. Our main bodyguard had just would stick his pistol in his belt of his blue jeans, and he'd get it out and show the kids how it worked. And he had a trunk full of shotguns and other, I don't know what, other guns and things in the trunk of the car. And it just seemed like I was really in more danger of some accident from the bodyguards than I really was in danger from insurgents.
I could see how that would not be very reassuring.
No, and I'm there with three children, and yeah. and in the casualness of the weapons that the guards had was really a concern to me.
When Marlon Brando arrived on the set to play Kurtz, Francis Coppola didn't realize that Brando was going to be as heavy as he was. How did that affect the way the role was conceived?
Well, when Francis realized that he was not slimmed down and able to play the Green Beret that he was originally committed to the part for, that Francis had to decide what to do in the situation. And his first idea was to play Marlon as an indulging, mango-eating, over-indulging himself here in the jungle in this situation, and just play him sort of overweight and his uniform not really fitting properly, and just go with that whole kind of look. And Marlon did not want to do that. He just was unwilling to do that. So then Francis was really at a loss. What could he do then if he wouldn't do that? So the two of them sat down for days talking about what part he could play and how they could resolve this, the ending of this movie. And they at one point came up with this very theatrical, larger-than-life personage that's you see, you know, just emerging from the darkness and the light, and you never really fully see him as a reality. He's much more of a sort of an archetypical, you know, mythical figure. And that was sort of a new approach for Brando, because he was known for his great, you know, reality, the grittiness of his realness in his performances, so that he struggled with that too. And the two of them had a real head-to-head go there trying to resolve the ending of the film.
A lot of Marlon Brando's part was improvised. There's some really interesting footage in Hearts of Darkness of Brando improvising. Would you describe a little bit the process that he and Francis Coppola used to improvise the part?
Well, they would come up with some actual lines and some of the dialogue that Marlon was to say, but the way Marlon works is he has to find a reality, so he would then put those lines into kind of a sort of free form improvising and talking as he went along through the part. So they had definite points that he was supposed to make, and he then kind of created around those points and kind of gives it that that reality. Because one of the things he does, he, for instance, will like write a line on his hand or put it on a piece of tape on one of the props nearby, so that he sort of has to look for that line and sort of give it that little edge of struggle that, just like we have in our own conversation, I don't know exactly what line I'm going to say next, and it gives my, you know, voice a kind of edgy reality, because I'm sort of fishing for what the next line is going to be. And he does that. It's part of his technique to not learn his lines and just spit them out slickly, but to really just have to have that little edge of reaching for them.
It sounds from the footage you shot that one of the techniques that they'd use to improvise was that Francis Coppola would ask Marlon Brando questions off camera, and then Brando would have to respond to the questions, and the camera would be rolling as he responded.
Yes, that's right.
Why are we in Vietnam?
It's our time to grab this moment in history. It's our time to teach. Huh? I can't think of any more dialogue today.
Dennis Hopper played the part of a really drugged-out American journalist in Vietnam. When he was cast in this role, he already had the reputation for being genuinely drugged out and burned out. And there's some terrific footage in the documentary of him and Francis Coppola talking together and trying to, like, work out what the part's going to be. And Coppola wants to know how come he doesn't know his lines yet. Why did Coppola even bring on Dennis Hopper? And I'm a really big fan of Hopper's asking this question, but he was in such bad shape then. You know, you wonder, why would you ask for this kind of trouble?
Well, I don't think Francis actually realized he was in that kind of shape. He thought he was a really good actor, and he had a lot of admiration for him, and he was cast in a role, a Green Beret role, and when he really got out there, Francis realized there's no way that he could play this the Green Beret, and he had to then sort of invent a part for him, because he thought he was very talented and there must be some way to use his gifts. And so Francis has the great ability to make the part fit the actor rather than the other way around. If the actor comes and can't play the part as written, he rewrites the part. And he certainly did that in Dennis's case, and tried to somehow utilize the character that he was, because that was one of the issues in the Vietnam War, is the use of drugs and the availability of drugs. And in fact, there in the Philippines, because of where we were there in Asia, there were drugs available and cheaply, and things that aren't available just here while everybody's home in Los Angeles, so that there was experimentation on the among the people who were out there. And Dennis, of course, was just really far out at that moment. In fact, he looks back at that period and is pretty astounded himself, I think.
Why did you say that to him in the scene?
Who?
Something clever like that. When he says, who are you? Why did you say, who are you?
Because I haven't learned my lines yet.
I know, you've had him for 5 days.
The other thing I'd like to say is that...
These glasses,
I can't see anything through them. But, like, you know, every crack represents a life I've saved. You know what I mean? They represent a life I've saved.
You say that, all that in the scene.
I do, but you see, the director, you know, the director says, you don't know your lines. And then, like,
well,
you know,
if you know your lines, then you can forget them. Because you know more or less.
I see. But that's what I'm trying to do. Forget those lines.
No, but it's fair to forget them if you never knew them.
During the making of Apocalypse Now, you sent your husband a telex, telling him he was becoming like Kurtz and creating his own Vietnam with his supply of wines and steaks and air conditioners. And you sent copies of this telex to the set designer, the cinematographer, and the production manager. Why did you do that? I mean, something must have really been working on you for you to not only telex Francis, but to telex the people who he worked with.
Well, at that moment, in my opinion, I was really concerned that you know, the whole thing was going too far and had the potential of tipping over the edge. And that was just my response to the situation at that point in time. And, I mean, now we're looking back at it, and so it doesn't seem so appropriate. But in the intensity of the moment, that was the moment where I just felt I had to speak out and give my opinion. And all throughout this project, it kept going, you know, closer and closer and closer to the edge, it seemed like. And in fact, I felt the forces and the pressure on Francis were so profound that I was very worried that he wouldn't be able to withstand all of those pressures. That was my one, you know, really deep and major concern, is that somehow it would just push him over the edge in some way. And in fact, he did collapse at one point and faint and there was a moment where I was concerned, you know, that he might have a nervous breakdown or something, but he is a strong person, and after a couple of days, he was able to get his strength back and get his balance back and go on with the project and complete it. But there were some very scary moments there.
Eleanor Coppola speaking to Terry Gross in 1992. Hearts of Darkness, the documentary on Apocalypse Now for which she filmed and supplied footage, has just been released on DVD.
Every man has got a breaking point. You and I have them. Walt Kurtz has reached his. And very obviously, he has gone insane.
Yes, sir. Very much so, sir. Obviously insane.